1 Samuel chapter 18. Father's Day is coming up in just a couple of weeks. I believe it's on the 17th, June 17th. And we have as a tradition here at Maranatha, the last, well, this will be the third year at least, had Ugly Tie Day the week following that. And so I'm giving you a heads up notice. I'm pretty sure Kyle is all sold out at the Crossroads Rescue Mission thrift store. Okay, if he's not, then I'm having him put him to the side until afterwards, so I have a chance this year. But the winner will receive a new tie, and so maybe you get a new tie this year from somebody, and you want to get rid of your old one. I will tell you this, if you walk in with the ugliest tie, you're going to walk out with half of your ugly tie, all right? So we'll have a good time with that. You know what makes something precious or valuable? In economics, it's the law of supply and demand. The more there is a demand of something, the more precious or valuable it is. But do you know what decreases the value of something? It is when there is an abundance of it, or worse than that, when the market is flooded with cheap imitations. I think about eBay when I think about cheap imitations. There is nothing on eBay. I'm not being paid by any other site, I can promise you that. But almost invariably, if you buy something off of eBay, you're probably buying it directly from China, and it's probably going to break at least that day, if not in the package before it gets to you, right? I'm just saying there's a lot of cheap imitations of things that you might like to have. But I will tell you this, one of the most valuable things in this world is not material goods. It is something called friendship. You see, our soul, God designed to have communion with Him. And in that, there is a desire, an innate desire, for human beings to have a communion with one another. But you realize in today's world of social media that someone can have 700, 800, 900 friends. They can have a million friends. And what does it mean to them? Listen, somebody with a million friends doesn't even know all the friends they have. And they'd be truly blessed to have one or two good and faithful friends. And in this world, the word friend and the concept of friend has been flooded with cheap imitations. Well, gee, if you're going to be a friend of somebody, you just click the little button, and suddenly you're a friend. Well, listen, that's not true. And you know that to truly be a friend, we're going to talk about friendship some tonight. I read a story about Hudson Taylor when he was young, and he was just an incredibly dynamic missionary to China. And he'd reached a very difficult crossroad in his life. For 2 years, he'd been working in Shanghai all by himself, but he'd taken a rather daring step as a missionary. He had gotten rid of his European clothing. He put on the robe and the silk slippers that were customary for Chinese teachers to wear. And the people back home didn't really understand this action, especially when he had shaved most of his head and grew his hair long and fashioned it into a ponytail that was also customary of that scholarly class. And so he began to receive intense criticism. And his simple passion was to merely win the Chinese to the Lord. And as he wrote of the first 2 years of his ministry, he said, "This opened doors that had remained closed up to this time." And after a second year as a missionary to China, a couple of events occurred really rapidly, one right after the other, which brought Hudson Taylor to the brink of emotional collapse. The first was in the form of a letter from his fiancée in England. She wrote that she did not love him anymore. She had become disillusioned by the criticism that she had heard about her fiancé. The second came in the form of the British Council that commanded Hudson Taylor to stop ministering in Shanghai because it was a non-treaty town. It was during this time that Hudson wrote a long letter to his mother saying, "Mother, I am sad, 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 and I do not know what to do. You know, we talked a little bit about motivation this morning. And I can tell you, God knew exactly what Hudson Taylor needed at this point and juncture in his life. And so God gave Hudson Taylor a friend. His name was William Burns. He was 20 years older than Hudson and had been serving the Lord that much longer as well. He came alongside Hudson Taylor, and for the next 7 months, they prayed and they traveled and they preached together. And Burns did something that was very significant. He shed his European clothes and put on the robe and silk slippers, and he also shaved his head. Hudson Taylor's son would write years later, "The friendship of this man was the gift of God to my father. Such a friendship is one of the crowning blessings of a life." Proverbs 17:17 reminds us that a friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. One author said this, "Life is like a ship, and some people get on and off board very easily. Some will stay on board as long as everything is sailing smoothly. But let the rough weather come, and they will abandon the ship. But a true friend is the one who will stick with you." I want you to read with me the first few verses of 1 Samuel chapter 18 as we consider this idea of friendship. "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would not let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David and his garments, even to his sword and his bow and his girdle." You know, I think about some of the friendships I've had throughout the years. And you know as well as I that the older you get, the more difficult it is to make long-lasting, meaningful friendships. But here, David and Jonathan, we could do an entire study on Jonathan and be amazed how that he would be so open to a friendship with somebody that was really there to replace him. And yet, he wanted, Jonathan that is, wanted for David, God's best for David. You know, true friends, in a sense, are built. You don't make them overnight. They're not little mushrooms or toadstools that just appear overnight. We had some appear in one of our mulch beds. The kids couldn't understand. It wasn't there the day before, and then you had this whole big, massive mushroom thing that was over there. Just keep telling them, don't eat it. Don't eat that. But friendship is like an oak tree, and it takes time, and it grows roots, and over years, it can weather the different storms that life hurls at it. The principle God gives is love one another as I have loved you. I want to give you several principles, and we're just going to use the acrostic FRIENDS to run through some principles, biblical principles of friendship. The first thing I want you to see is that if you're going to be a friend, you must be faithful. You must be faithful. Proverbs 18:24 says, "A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother." Now, we will often use that as a reference to the Lord Jesus Christ, reminding us that we do have a friend that is closer than a brother. But can I tell you that the principle that is being given there is that there are some friends that are closer than family members. Well, I think about just our family. As we've moved from time to time, when we're up in West Virginia, we moved to a place for the first time that we didn't have, we moved to a place where we didn't have any family. When we moved down here to North Carolina, again, we moved to a place where we didn't have any blood family. But I'm sure thankful for our church family. And those are the connections. And so often, listen, people here are oftentimes closer than our blood relatives, not only in approximation, but in relationships, because we have that daily discourse or that weekly discourse where we're able to talk and communicate and fellowship. Jonathan would turn out to be an incredibly faithful friend to David. In 1 Samuel 19, we could read of Jonathan's loyalty toward David. He defends David in front of his father, who intends to kill him. And Jonathan at that time rebukes his father, and he recalls to his own father's memory David's faithfulness in serving him and even killing Goliath. Now, it's one thing to defend somebody while they're standing in front of you. But I tell you, if you're going to be a faithful friend, that means you're going to stick up for somebody even when they're not there. It would have been very easy for Saul to play both sides and say, listen, David, I'm your friend. I'm here for you. But over in front of his dad, he's like, yeah, dad, I don't know what he's talking about. Do you understand? And so often we are duplicitous in our friendships. And rather than putting a stake in the ground and saying, I am going to defend this person's honor whether they're there or not, it is very, very easy when everybody else has something derogatory to say towards somebody that is a friend of yours to either keep your silence or just kind of nod in agreement. But in your heart, you're saying, no, I don't believe that. Oh, but listen, your silence is consent. You are agreeing by not saying anything. And if somebody comes to you with some gossip about somebody, let me tell you the first thing you should do. The very first thing you should do is come up with something that you do respect about that person and share it with the person that's gossiping about you. If you can get them to stop, you say, hey, listen, I don't need to hear this. But if they've already gotten it out, you say, well, listen, I just want to tell you that person's faithful. Or that person is loving. That person is kind. I'll tell you this. I don't have a lot of people gossip to me about other people. I'm thankful for that. I hope you don't either. But if you do that, it won't be long before people stop coming to you because misery loves company, you've heard. But I'll tell you this, people that want to talk and gossip want to collect those type of people, those types of friends around them. Be faithful in your friendships one to another. In 1 Samuel 20, we read of a plan concocted by Jonathan to reveal his father's plans towards David. Jonathan was going to practice his archery, you remember, and he brings his servant out, and if he overshoots the target, well, then his father was going to plan on killing him. If he undershoots it, well, then David can come home. And so he goes through his target practice, and he tells the servant to go collect it that has gone past the target, telling David the message that he needs to hear, and then he dismisses that servant, that armor bearer, and he goes home, and Jonathan waits for David to come out. And he reveals Saul's plan to him. His faithfulness was to that covenant he had made with his friend. How faithful are you in your friendship? Listen, I'm not talking about when they're there. I'm not talking about when you have the opportunity to maintain that communication. But I'm talking about day in and day out. If you should be called upon to stand and defend somebody's reputation or defend somebody's action or defend somebody's decision-making. I'm not saying defending sin, you understand. We need to be faithful. There is a glut of unfaithfulness in our culture today. I think about who our best friends should be. Listen, fellas, if you're married, your wife ought to be your best friend. Ladies, if you're married, your husband ought to be your best friend. And so as we go through this, not only am I talking about within the church, but I'm talking about within our own homes. It should be representative of these principles in our relationships with our spouse. We need to be faithful. So often, we're faithful as long as it is convenient, so long as it benefits me in some way. We're going to talk about sacrifice before we finish tonight. But understand, God is looking for some men and some women, some young men and some young women, some boys and some girls that will simply decide that they are going to be a faithful friend. Not only do we need to be faithful, we need to recognize several things. As I mentioned earlier, I believe Jonathan recognized what God's best for David was, not what Jonathan's best for his life was. And they made this covenant. I believe probably Jonathan recognized that God's hand was on David and David was going to be the next king. And perhaps David said, listen, you can be my right-hand man and we can lead this nation. And they had not only just this respect for each other, but they recognized what God's best for one another was. You know, a true friend will sharpen, spiritually speaking, their friend. A good friend's going to make you a sharper and better person. Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend, it says in Proverbs 27:17. You know, I believe a true friend's going to see where you're getting dull and help you put an edge on that part of your life. But there are a lot of people that will say that you're a friend, but we are living in a day and an age of enablers. Do you understand that? And people will go around looking for people to enable their bad and poor decisions. And it is the person that will stand up and tell them the truth that they don't like or don't want to be around because they don't want someone telling them that their decision was poor. Now, if someone comes to you and is critical, there's a few things you ought to ask yourself. The first one is, what is the walk of the person that's telling me this? Listen, if this is somebody that is on the fringe of Christianity, they've called upon the name of the Lord, and they have Jesus Christ as merely a fire escape, well, listen, I'm not going to put a whole bunch of credence in what they say. I always want to take criticism and be introspective to this point. There could be a sliver of truth, and I don't want to miss that if somebody has something to say. But I'm not going to dwell on that. I'm probably not going to make any life-changing decisions based on criticism from somebody that's not walking with God. But listen, if somebody comes that I have respect for and I respect them because of their walk with the Lord, then I'm going to listen. I may not like it, and I'd be unwise to lash out. It'd be better to take it to God and say, God, show me, is this true in my life? There's only one thing worse than somebody telling you that you need to change something in your life, having to admit that they're right. But a true friend is not going to enable poor decisions. Boy, somebody comes and they have made a bad decision, and suddenly, do you ever notice people deflect? And every bad decision and every result from a bad decision is somebody else's fault. And it's time that we take credit for our own bad choices. But don't be that person that helps that person that has made bad choices deflect their consequences on other people. Well, it is because of... Well, I know, they shouldn't have done that. No. Listen, don't help somebody. You are not helping them become a better person. You are not sharpening them by enabling them to make poor, unbiblical choices. If you love them, you will help them to see what God has said and enable them instead to make the difficult choices that will help them in their walk with God. I think about Jonathan. I mean, he is really giving David everything he needs. First of all, we need to recognize God's best for someone else. We need to recognize the things that others do. You know, we ought to show appreciation to our friends. Have you ever gotten a letter of appreciation? I have, from time to time. You know, most people can probably live 6 months on something like that, if it's a true heartfelt letter of appreciation. And you know, the truth of the matter is, it doesn't take us but a few minutes to write one. But yet, we don't think it of any real consequence to take that time to write a letter of appreciation to somebody that has done something for us. I'm not talking about just a little thank you card. Listen, I'm going to help you single fellows out there. You ought to get a box of cards that says thank you on it. And when somebody does something nice for you, you ought to send them a card that says thank you. You say, that seems pretty elementary. I'm just saying it's a good idea. And sometimes you got a mentor from behind the pulpit, okay? Even in the area of our marriage, when's the last time you thanked your wife for taking care of the kids or doing the laundry or any of the sundry chores that she does on a daily basis? You say, well, that's her responsibilities. Well, you know, I believe that if you would show some appreciation, it'd probably go a pretty long way in your relationship with her, that friendship that God wants you to have with her. Ladies, when's the last time you thanked your husband for providing for your house? Well, that's his responsibility. You know, just like you want to hear it, I don't think he minds hearing it too much either. Recognize the things they do, but listen, recognize who they are. It's been wisely said, appreciation is for what people do, but affirmation is for who people are. The Lord Jesus constantly affirmed his disciples. That does not mean that he approved of their poor choices, but he was constantly affirming his relationship with them and acknowledging his relationship with them. You understand? Not because they had done something, but simply because of who they were. Affirmation is important. Not only do we need to be faithful, not only do we need to recognize. By the way, one other thing that we need to recognize, people's needs in our lives. If you have a friend and you see they have a need, that's an opportunity for you to be a friend. How many times have you heard somebody said, nobody cares, nobody cares what happens to me? What has happened? People have overlooked that person's need. Perhaps it's for affirmation. Perhaps it's for a list of numerous different things. But understand, if you want to be a friend, it'd be good for you to observe and see what somebody else needs if you're going to be their friend. Be interested in that person. What does that mean? It means give them your full heart and your full attention. Listen, I think we've all been guilty of this. It used to be the paper. We could read the paper while somebody's talking. Guys, I know you're not multi-trackers, okay? Do not try to convince me you can read an article, whether it's on your iPad or in an old-fashioned newspaper, or watch the ball game and have a coherent conversation with your wife. You're like, all I need to do is wait for her to take a breath and I nod and say, yeah, right? That's not a good idea. No, if you're going to have a friendship, and whether it's with your wife or someone else, how often have you ever felt like you've talked to somebody that is waiting for you to take a breath so they can start talking? They're not listening to you. They're just thinking about the next thing they're going to say. That's not a true friend. A true friend is going to be interested in what their friends are interested in. And when you talk to people, then listen to them. Look them in the eye. When you do that, you give the impression that what that person has to say is important. When you acknowledge others, you're saying, you're important to me. Bible says in Ephesians 1:6 that God has made us accepted in the Beloved. Isn't it true that we want to be accepted by others? Yeah, if you say no, then you're lying to yourself. Listen, there is all the way from little kids all the way to the adults. People want to be accepted. If that were not true, there'd be no such thing as peer pressure. And wouldn't it be great if peer pressure stopped when you graduated high school? Wouldn't it be great if it stopped long before then? But the truth of the matter is, we want to be accepted, and so oftentimes we'll do things in order to be accepted by others. But let me tell you, if you're going to be a good friend, you'll accept somebody for who they are. Again, I'm not talking about sinful behavior, but what I'm saying is you don't expect somebody to change who they are in order to be their friend. How many married couples have you seen that he thought he was going to change her, or she thought he was going to change him? And it doesn't work that way. All right, we need to be faithful. We need to recognize some things. We need to be interested in them. We need to be to be honest with you, this got deleted off my notes. It's 7:05, so I'm going to fast forward to dependable. I apologize for that. Be dependable. I can count on you when the chips are down. True friend says, a true friend is going to prod you, to poke you. Proverbs 27:6 says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. A friend who really loves you is going to wound you if necessary. It's like I said earlier, they're going to tell you the truth. I read a story about a dog that was owned by a professor in Tokyo. And this dog would walk him to the train station every day, and then it would go home, and somehow it knew what time this professor was coming home, and it would break out and go wait for this professor at the train station. It's the Subiu train station in Japan. And every day it would meet the professor, and the professor would take it home, and this happened for about a year and a half or a year and 4 months, something like that. And one day the professor, I don't know if it was a brain aneurysm or something at a meeting, and he suddenly passed away without notice. And the dog went out there and waited for him. And they took him, and I don't know, I read a couple of different accounts where it says that he would break out of whatever house he was at and would start looking for him at the house where they used to live. And eventually, he would go back to the train station at the time that this professor's train would come in and wait for him faithfully. Every single day. Somehow about in 1930-something, one of the Japanese papers got hold of the story and printed it, and it was about a year later that this dog, day after day, almost 400 days, I think I read somewhere, that the dog would wait for its master. It was dependable. So much so that even after the dog died, they put a bronze statue at the train station as a memento of something that was dependable. Listen, if there's one thing that we're lacking in this world, it's dependability in friendship. How dependable are you? Listen, a friend is one that is willing, really the last one is sacrifice. But I think dependability and sacrifice go hand in hand. Listen, when the Lord said there's no greater thing that can be done than a man lay down his life for a friend, that sacrifice. You see, if you have a friend, you know that you can call them. It doesn't matter the time of the day. It doesn't matter the time of the night. And they're going to be there for you because they're dependable. It's not the same as being faithful. Faithful carries the idea of loyalty, okay? But dependability says, listen, no matter what, I'm going to help you, even if it costs me something. That ought to be true in marriages for sure, but I fear there's more competing husbands and wives rather than teams working together. And listen, instead of being dependable, we're competitors. We need to make sure that when our spouse needs us, we are there for them. emotionally, spiritually, physically, we need to be there. You know, the sacrifice, I think about this passage of Scripture. Jonathan had given him his cloak in verse 4. He gave him his robe, gave him his sword, his bow, and his belt, his girdle. You know what those things would have represented? It would have represented and showed the kingdom, really, that this was the next king. This was the prince. Not Jonathan, but this man. He was sacrificing his future in order to allow David to have God's best in his life. Are you willing to sacrifice something for your friends to have God's best in their life? At the very least, your spouse? No, I want God's best in my life. Now, let me tell you, if you will serve your family, I believe you'll have God's best. But if you try to take that which is yours, you're going to lose it. That's the principle about taking or gaining your life. True friendship truly is costly. It's not easy to maintain a friendship. John 15:13 says, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." In Proverbs 17:17, we started with, "A friend loveth at all time, and a brother is born for adversity." You must be willing to pay the price of friendship if you are going to have friends. What kind of friend are you? I'm not talking about what kind of Sunday smile that you put on and shake people's hand. And by the way, I wanted to take this for just a minute and say, how are we doing when we have people that come in and visit? Are we a friendly church? You see, if you're going to have friends, you must show yourself friendly. I know we have some visitors tonight, but just bear with me. I'm not saying this so everybody swarms you after the service, all right? But I am saying that when we have visitors, I hope that you make yourself friendly to them. I hope that you'll present yourself and talk to them and truly be interested in what they have to say and be encouraging to them in some way. Be a friend. But especially in your house, you ought to show yourself to be the best friend. Not so you can get something, but so that you can be the biblical definition of a friend. Let's pray together with our heads bowed and our eyes closed. Father, I thank you for your word. I thank you for David and Jonathan and their example of an enduring friendship. And Lord, I pray that you would help us just to be faithful and to recognize those needs and really just to be interested in others, to be dependable and, Lord, to sacrifice. Lord, I pray that you would help us to look at our relationships that we have, other church family, Lord, those that come in and visit. But especially, Father, I pray that you would help us to look at our lives with our spouses and help us to see if we are being the friend that you have called us to be.